Welcome to Packet Pushers, the data networking podcast where real people discuss events, technology and network life in the networking industry. This week, quite a unique show. Kurt Bales has gotten in contact with me after one of his customers needed a new data center. He's been touring the vendors and finding out what's happening with their technologies and rang me up to say this would make a great show. We had a bit of a chat and we said, absolutely, great idea. So who else to talk about networking, you know, data center technologies, but Ivan Pepelniak, and to give us a really strong technical perspective on what we've got. I'd like to invite anybody who's listening, if you have something that you want to talk about, maybe you've just been through a similar process with a new technology like a wireless or a WAN or firewalls, and you want to raise some questions or have some validation or just talk to some other people about it, get in contact with me by emailing me at packetpushers@gmail.com and let's see if there's something there that we can talk about and share it with the community. After all, there's lots of people out there who'd like to know what other people are doing, and it's better for all of us if we know exactly what's going on. This week, two special guests to the show because we want to focus on looking at data center fabrics. I'd like to welcome back to the show Ivan Pepelniak. Ivan, what have you been doing this week?
It's IPv6, 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 and IPv6.
I noticed you've had a lot of blog posts out.
Oh, yeah, and running two IPv6 webinars and an enterprise MPLS VPN one in one day.
Yeah, I saw you. You nearly talk yourself silly.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And also with us here this week is Kurt Bales. How are you, Kurt? Tell us where you're from and what you've been doing.
Yeah, Kurt Bales from the Network Janitor blog and a company called eIntelligo. I spent most of this week working on, well, a quote for some customers for data center fabrics, and as much as I hate to admit it, more IPv6. Doing lots of reports.
Doing lots of reports. Okay. Well, let's move into the show. So this week, Kurt has been interviewing with certain data center vendors and looking at them as a competitive strategy on behalf of a customer. And I thought that would be a great topic to get together and talk about the different data center strategies. And because Kurt has been in the driving seat, tell us, maybe set a bit of background there for us, Kurt. Tell us what's actually going on there.
I think last time I was on the show, I just mentioned that I was going over to Apricot to do the presentation on data center fabrics and data center 3.0. And the day I gave my presentation was actually the day that Juniper launched their QFX product, which kind of meant desperately before my talk, I'm adding new slides and thinking of new content.
And desperately reading up the lack of information attached.
Well, exactly. And it turns out that the blurb that we were given by the Juniper people on site didn't necessarily match what was available today. And so doing quite a bit of research on what the different aspects of this data center fabric are, because as Ivan has blogged about before, data center fabric and layer two multipath isn't just one thing. It's whatever the vendor decides to call it.
Okay, so perhaps we should pick up on the first thing. So what you're really saying there is that perhaps the surprising outcome is that the three vendors that you've looked at, Cisco, Juniper, and Brocade, are three completely different solutions that have incompatible technologies.
Yeah.
Crickets. So yes, that's not an equivocation. So that's just flat. Now, Ivan, you've blogged a lot about this lately. I noticed you put a blog post up a while back about that. If you send me a link, I'll put it into the show notes, saying exactly that. How different are the three vendors apart?
Well, you see, Brocade and Cisco, and when I say Cisco, I should really say Fabric Path on Nexus 7000 today. Mm-hmm. They're really very close. If only they would be following the same standard. Mm-hmm. So regardless of what Brocade is advocating as the final state of their fabric, today you still configure every box separately. You monitor every box separately. Every box has its own IP address. You telnet to every box separately. So it's no different from a bunch of Nexus boxes in a fabric path environment.
Okay, so this is Brocade with their VCS strategy?
VCS, which is supposed to be virtual chassis system, yeah.
Well, and in the word virtual chassis, doesn't that imply that all switches act like a single chassis?
Well, that's what they are trying to tell you.
Right.
Effectively, what they have internally is they have Trill on the data plane, which mm-hmm. means they're using Trill encapsulation, okay. but they don't have Trill on the control plane. So instead of ISIS, they use FSPF from Fibre Channel. So effectively, they reuse the Fibre Channel code. Yeah. And instead of worldwide names, they are routing MAC addresses.
Wow. So it's not, for the listeners out there who may or may not be aware, Trill, which is the IETF standard, you know, mostly led by Radia Perlman, uses the IS protocol to spread the MAC address information around the switching network. That part of the, so the Trill protocol consists of a couple of different parts. One is a routing protocol which spreads the list of MAC addresses around, which is why data center networks will never get beyond a certain size, because you can only hold a certain number of MAC addresses in a table, and that's why Trill won't scale to huge size like the like internet size. And Trill talks about the encapsulation of packets and signaling and all a range of different things, but one of them is there's a routing protocol to protocol MAC addresses around. There's different ways to solve that, but Cisco's using a proprietary encapsulation. Is that how Fabric Path works, Ivan?
Yeah, Fabric Path uses ISIS, so it's close to Trill on the control plane. Mm-hmm. The truth is that the ISIS details haven't been standardized yet. Yes. So you cannot implement standard Trill today because the standards haven't been finalized yet. But at least Cisco is using the right routing protocol. So once, you know, all the bit values and everything is finalized, they might need to tweak the code a bit to change the values. But they have it like 90% right.
Okay.
The problem they have is on the data plane, because they're using totally different encapsulation from Trill. The principles are the same, yes. But the packet format is completely different.
So they're using a proprietary packet format.
Yes.
Okay. Now, there's potentially a reason for that, and maybe we'll come back on that. So, Kurt, you've also been dealing with Juniper, who recently announced their QFabric. So tell me how that's different from Brocade and Cisco.
Once again, we've got another proprietary solution. When the product was launched back in the end of February, there was quite a lot of talk about this phenomenal switch, and it's the first part of the QFabric, and buy it now and you can start building fabrics and do all this amazing, wonderful stuff. And on specs of the switch alone, the switch just as a single switch is a pretty awesome switch. So I started doing some more research, and you learn things that there are like 48 SFP plus ports in their QFX switch, and it's got some 40 gig ports, and it can do fiber channel, but not a lot of documentation on how to build the fabric in the QFX book. So during the meeting I had with Juniper, it was sort of, okay, some of my customers want to start out with just two switches, you know, build their infrastructure and grow from there. You know, can I plug two switches together? And the response, and it's on their website in the documentation, is that to build a fabric, you must have the interconnect node. So essentially, the interconnect node will act as a remote fabric or a remote backplane, I guess is the best way to put it. Each switch connects with a 40 gig uplink to this remote backplane, which does give them a series of goals that they can meet. For example, any port on a switch to any other port on any other switch has something like up to or no more than 5 microseconds of latency from port to port. Unfortunately, you can't just take two QFX switches and plug them directly into each other. And the reason they went down this path is so they can maintain a list of those sorts of standards for end-to-end connectivity and QoS.
So they're moving down a... So what they're actually doing is a proper fabric, from what my interpretation of it is. So a fabric, a switching fabric, the term usually refers to the switching fabric inside the switch. So there's always a chip or two deep down inside the guts of a switch. It's a silicon piece, which has I/O channels that go off. So normally we refer to it in a switching chassis, like a 6500 or the 7000.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big chip with a non-blocking architecture with all sorts of fancy things in it. And each blade then feeds into that silicon chip. And effectively, the way I understand it from what you were saying there is that the Q fabric actually says, well, in the middle, we're going to have that silicon chip, which does all the innie to innie and all the magic. But we're going to use a 40 gigabit Ethernet to go out to the edge. So that instead of having a blade connecting down to the silicon fabric, I'm actually going to use a 40 gig extension and go out to switches so that it acts like a backplane connection, just like a 6500 chassis has backplanes, or a router chassis has backplanes connecting modules down to the central core. Is that correct?
Mostly. I guess what I should probably say is there are three components to a Q fabric solution. At the moment, there is the end switch, which at the moment is the QFX 3500. Then there is the interconnect chassis or the interconnect node. And then there is a controller node. The controller node would be the smarts of the backplane that you were discussing. Whereas the interconnect...
Queen. Exactly.
The Borg, the Borg queen. Queen.
Yeah. For those... Okay, so... okay, so the controller is the Borg queen. And then you have the...
So each of the switches have their own set of smarts, and that backplane or the interconnect module is effectively a bunch of wires, very fast wires, but a bunch of wires and copper. There's not, there's no real brains in it.
So it's a three-part, so the fabric is three parts, three elements. There's the edge device. What's it called again, the edge device?
And switch.
This switch is the QFX 3500.
QFX 3500 is the edge.
QFX.
Yep. And what's the core switch then?
Well, there is no core switch. Right. There's just the interconnect fabric or the interconnect node.
Interconnect node. And that's a separate product though, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So it's a separate SKU.
It is a separate SKU, which currently is not available.
Okay. But coming.
Coming Q3.
Okay.
Which was my first question is, how much and when can I buy this?
Yes.
The question was Q3, and we're not sure how much it will cost.
Okay. And the controller is another SKU?
Yes.
And the controller is another SKU with, as far as I'm aware, currently has no release date. It's sometime next year.
Hold on.
Now,
how can
built...
you build the fabric without the controller?
So the information I've been given, or I was presented in the presentation, was that the interconnect module, like they have an interconnect module and they have the controllers currently in testing with large customers. But the release date to the general public is Q3 for the interconnect fabric and next year for the controller node. I asked the same question. If I need the controller node to use the fabric, why am I buying the fabric without the controller node? I didn't get an answer to that yet, the end result of all of this is I can buy a really, really good top-of-rack switch right now, but I cannot work out the ROI of QFX today because I don't know the total cost.
Yeah, so it's not a product that you can buy today is what they're saying.
Yeah.
So they're announcing a strategy.
Sure.
They've announced a strategy. This is the view. If you're on a 5-year horizon for buying a data center and in 2 years you think, then you might start to consider the Juniper solution because it might be ready by then.
Sure. Now, as I mentioned before, as a top of rack switch, right? And I'll be kind. I'll compare it just to Juniper. As a top of rack switch, this is phenomenally better than the other Juniper top of rack switches they've got. Right. It's a layer 3 switch like everything from Juniper. It's 48 ports of SFP Plus, and it's got 40 gig port QSFP Plus, ingress and egress rate limiting, all of these wonderful things. And some of the quotes I've gotten back on the product actually doesn't make it that much more expensive than the EX4500, the 40 port 10 gig plus switch they have. So if I looked at it just as a top of rack switch, I find it quite compelling. If I'm to look at it as a Q fabric, I don't know what my ROI is yet.
But how does that match with what you're seeing, Ivan? I've put a blog post out a while back which talked about controller-based networking and how it...
Oh, that's different.
Is, well, I think QFabric is a controller-based network.
No, it's QFabric is Borg.
Is Borg.
Yeah, because, you know, that's the important difference between what I call Borg and Big Brother.
Yep.
Because QFabric is, in my understanding, more or less the same thing as, let's say, hugely stackable switches, only this is done better. It all works primarily in the control plane.
Mm.
So you figure out where the MAC addresses are. If you remember the tech field day where Abner was hinting at something coming along,
mm-hmm.
and that was QFabric,
yep.
they were telling us that they also use ISIS internally, which also makes sense.
Well, you need a, you need some protocol, so you...
Yeah, so it's really the difference between Trill and QFabric is the management plane. Because here you will eventually configure the whole fabric as one entity. Whereas controller-based networking like OpenFlow mm-hmm. really sets up, or at least it has the capability to redirect each session to the controller, and then the controller would look into the session, figure out how to route that particular session
yeah.
across the fabric, and download the 5-tuple into TCAMs of all the affected switches. And that doesn't scale.
You don't think controller-based networking will scale?
Not if you do per-session controller-based networking.
Okay, yeah, I see what you're saying.
If you remember multi-layer switching from Cisco?
Yep.
And that was in a single box?
Yes.
Now imagine multi-layer switching trying to control the whole data center fabric.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. But the advantages of a controller-based network are that you can dynamically reroute by having a single point or a single perspective of the entire data center.
Well, you see, there are many ways you can dynamically reroute today.
Mm.
I mean, there is MPLS traffic engineering. There are all these routing protocols. So all these things have already been invented and proven to work.
When has that ever stopped anybody, though?
Pardon?
When has that ever stopped anybody? It keeps people in jobs by inventing...
Reinventing the wheel. Yeah, you're right. And now they're reinventing the same wheel on layer two.
No, see, my vision of QFabric is more that it's a controller-based network. So they have the switching fabric in one, and that's what you're calling the ICN, the interconnect.
Yeah, but you see, QFabric seems to be control plane thing.
Abstraction, yeah.
Yeah, so they figure out where the MAC addresses are, and then they download the information how to get from point A to point B in QFabric, and that's it.
I wonder if there's a two-stage strategy going on there, where in the initial phase you buy the QFX3500 and you use it as a normal top-of-rack switch. The second stage is that you put in the interconnect networking to provide a chassis-type backplane between them, and then there's another stage, and that's not the second stage, that's the first stage. So you buy a QFX3500 and an ICN, and then you use them as kind of like a big flat layer 2 network. And then the controller comes out later on, and that then allows you to re-architect to a Big Brother style with the control plane fully abstracted, and you suppress the control plane in the QFX3500s in the future.
Yeah, that's exactly how they do it today in the high-end switches with the external routing engine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. I mean, that works. Every single vendor has something similar.
Yep.
Juniper has external brains, Cisco has VSS, and so on and so on and so on.
Yeah.
That works.
So a coherent control plane across
many
perfect. Devices.
I have no problem with that. Inspecting individual sessions and routing sessions, session by session, that is a totally different beast.
Okay. So you mentioned OpenFlow. I don't think we'll talk about that today because I'm setting up a discussion with some people from OpenFlow in the next week or two. And maybe we could talk more to them about what their strengths and their weaknesses are in that forum.
Perfect.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, because that'll round out this discussion, because OpenFlow is even further along the horizon than these technologies are. So what was your vision of the Juniper? So let's just wrap up the Juniper discussion. Kurt, what was your vision around the Juniper then? What did you feel was strong and what was weak, and what would you feel saying to the customer about that?
Like I've mentioned before, I think the QFX switch itself, compared to Juniper's other offerings and potentially, honestly, compared to other vendors' offerings as well, is a great top-of-rack switch. And for the price that I've been quoted for it, I would probably buy it over the other top-of-rack switch solutions. As a Q-Fabric, the Q-Fabric will be very good, assuming the prices that are rumored around it. But until there's a confirmed product code and pricing, I can't picture it as much more than a top-of-rack switch or push it as more of a top-of-rack switch to customers. I mean, one of the things that I've been told, for example, is that Interconnect Fabric is 21RU, which if you own your own data center, you can allocate a chunk of floor space. But if you're in a hosted data center and you're paying by the RU, that's a lot of space for one fabric or one remote backplane.
So 21RUs.
21RU. I said, if it's your data center in your back room or your corporate office, sure, you just put it at the end of your row and cable to it. But if that's half a rack, if you're paying for by the rack.
Well, that's
two if you want redundancy, so it's a whole rack.
Well, you need two. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's probably going to need an awful lot of juice.
Yeah, it has like 5 terabytes, terabits of throughput.
Mm. Well, it scales to... those backplanes have something like 128 of the 40 gig ports. I mean, it's designed to scale to 120 top of rack switches or something and 6,000 ports.
6,000 10 gig ports, probably too.
Yeah, which is good. There's the contention between the 40 10 gig ports and the 40 gig uplink ports.
Yep.
But as I said, as a switch, I think it's a very good solution if you're building a large layer 2 network within the bounds of what this can build. There's also...
Okay, and let's face it too, that a lot of people actually aren't building 6,000 port 10 gig networks today.
Well,
they might be end of the year, or they'd be planning for them now. But
sure.
You know, VMware wants flat networks with Mac and Mac to run cloud networking overlays that have nothing to do with native Mac addressing, and this has potentially has some advantages for that environment.
Sure, I would question. You would have to do the maths to work out how many top of rack switches you had to justify building that QFabric, because you do need that centralized device. But I wouldn't be stopping people from buying QFX switches right now.
So let's come back on the Brocade solution then. So we've talked about Brocade having... Ivan's basically pointed out that the solution today uses VCS, which uses Trill for the Trill encapsulation for the data plane, but has the FSPF control, based routing engine for the control plane, so it's not Trill compliant. I believe that Brocade hasn't specifically stated that they will ever support Trill, but I may be wrong.
I don't know whether they stated that in any what you could call official documents.
Yep.
But Brooke Reams wrote in his blog post, which is within the brocade.com, so it is as official as it gets, I would say, that they are planning to support ISIS when the standard is finished.
Okay, so good news for that. So you've had a presentation, Kurt, from Brocade. How are you thinking about that solution?
The presentation that I got from Brocade, I was quite impressed by. I mean, my history with Brocade is mostly for fiber channel SAN switches and working with Foundry Kit back when Foundry was Foundry. Mm-hmm. But the new VDX platform that they've been talking about, I spoke to Brocade when I was over in APNIC, Apricot Conference, organized a meeting with them, with my customer for last week, and they had a lab of 3 or 4 VDX switches running VCS and some VMware boxes, some SAN. and went through pulling cables and watching traffic flow from port to port, which I'll admit was very impressive looking, and it kind of dazzled me for a bit. And then Ivan brought me back into the real world, so it was all right.
Ivan spends more time looking at this stuff than most of us can.
Exactly. For the customers that I deal with, who will build three racks of a VMware cluster, because they're dealing with multi-tenant networks, the other limitations they have on their design basically means that you don't do much more than three or four racks of kit. And the good thing with the Brocade solution is that I can buy two switches and I can just plug them into each other. They, as we've discussed, they do trill at the data plane level and ISA. Oh, they don't do ISS. They do their own proprietary protocol at the control plane. But today I can take two switches, which are about the same price as the other top of rack switches we've been discussing, and I can just form a fabric, and while it may not be optimal, I can plug them into any port anyway, and they work it out.
Yeah, and there's no spanning tree.
One of the interesting things was they, for example, they can do fiber channel over Ethernet, but they don't have any native fiber channel ports in the current models. Word is that that's coming in the next model.
Look, do you want to? I mean, do you really want onboard fiber channel in an FCOE network? Or you want you?
Yes,
I
mean,
I often
want.
See this.
You do.
Yeah, because to connect legacy Kia, or is that too?
Yeah, exactly. The only reason why you would go for FCOE is because you have legacy FCSAN. Otherwise, right. You go for iSCSI, right?
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. Or NFS if you're talking to NetApp.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you talk to NetApp, everything the answer is NFS, not iSCSI. That's just because they have some. Yeah.
Whichever one you go to.
Yeah.
So the only reason, in my opinion, you need FCOE is because you already have FC.
Or you're connecting your servers down, your collapsing servers.
Yeah, whatever. You already have FC.
You're using some legacy operating system that needs to see FC LUNs because that's the only way it knows how to work.
Yeah, but if Kurt is talking about VMware, that's not the case.
No. I can see the value in FCOE for certain types of converged, for server connectivity to the network.
Exactly.
But there's only one vendor that's really supporting that, so it's hard to imagine that it's ever going to be very successful.
And we'll not go there, right?
No, we're not. We're talking about data center networking today.
I think one of the things that should point out, first of all, is that in the current solutions, the VDX platform is only a layer 2 product. That is a key distinguisher between it and the other solutions we've been talking about. But it probably puts it more on track with, say, the original Nexus 5000, where it's a very capable Layer 2 switch, but currently no Layer 3 features. They're working on that, apparently, but we'll wait and see when that's available. The algorithms that they were using for determining how to move traffic between paths, where if you have a lag, for example, an aggregated link, it takes into account that the path cost is the same, but when distributing traffic, it'll distribute the traffic evenly across all the members of the lag, which I put in quotes is...
Kurt, this can't work.
Oh, I understand.
The problem is that you can't shift packets of the same session across multiple parallel links, because then you get out of order packets and something will break. Not with IP, but with other more faint-hearted protocols like FCOE.
Sure. Oh, sorry. I should have prefaced that with the demonstration was discussing splitting these up, which I sort of came back, and the closest I could come back to understanding that was in Greg's post about 40 gig and 100 gig Ethernet with the CERTAS framing across the cable. So before it leaves the port or the virtual port, it's one packet. But when it physically pumps it across the wire, are they doing something like that? Or is it just marketing spin?
That might be what they're doing. So you're saying that effectively they would do multiplexing.
An SMLT, a split multi-link trunking, which is what the
Avaya product. Multiplexing, yeah.
Yeah, so the Avaya product has something like that, which is SMLT, where you can actually send packets for a given destination either left or right down a link. But when it gets to the other end, it puts them back into the correct order again, even though they go to two different chassis.
See, Greg had the answer to it all along.
Well,
no, but that's... No,
SMLT
sure
does...
You sure it does that for packets of the same session?
Does it resequence them? Is that the point?
Exactly,
the
yeah. Because that's CPU intensive. That's extremely CPU intensive.
Because you've got to have buffers in the separate fabrics
exactly.
and everything to put them back in order.
Yeah, and then
that's highly unlikely.
If you lose one, you don't know how long to wait for it.
That would be very... I mean, you're talking about millisecond-level buffering of enormous granularity.
Yeah.
Operating at extraordinarily fast speed. So I can see what you're saying, Kurt, but I...
I would need to test it a lot more. I mean, the test that they were doing showed IP traffic to VMs and FCOE traffic between, well, the FCOE client and the FCOE storage. Mm. And both of those flows did split, but in the constraints of the lab that they were demonstrating, I wasn't able to necessarily determine exactly how flows were traveling. Mm-hmm. I remain skeptical, but hopefully it follows that path.
Well, let's put it this way. If they are able to split a single flow across multiple links, I would go, wow.
I'd want to know how. I want to know.
Well, that's the other thing. Yeah, so would I.
Yeah. I'd really be
impressed.
Because there'd be like special little gnomes sprinkling unicorn horn on those packages they went through.
You say it like the laws of physics are a fact or something.
Well, you know, some people can get a little caught up with their marketing, get a little breathless, a little overexcited. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always possible. Okay, but so Brocade, you liked it. It seemed to do what it said on the tin. The products have they're shipping effectively. A little bit of weirdness there with a layer two only, but you know.
For my customers, I would at this stage, I'd be happy to sell them the VDX platform for a small fabric today, because I can just buy them as I need them and plug them in how I want to plug them in. Doesn't necessarily mean it's the optimal design, but it is a workable product. In the future, obviously, are they going to properly support Trill so it integrates with other platforms? I don't know.
No, I wouldn't count on them being interoperable with other people for a few years.
Oh, of course.
Yes, there's two things. I agree with Ivan. Two things about Brocade that worry me. One is that they've had a history of being proprietary and closed.
Mm-hmm.
And does the tiger change its spots? So if Brocade truly wants to adopt open standards and participate, then that has to be seen. You can't just say, oh, we'll do it. Compare that with Cisco, who says, yes, we will support open standards, and you kind of believe that they will. But Brocade has a history of doing everything for themselves, not referring to anybody else, running the standards in their own ways. So that I would really have to see that happen. The second question is about Brocade is, what's their long-term corporate business going to look like? As at the moment, they get, you know, vast amount of their revenue comes off Fibre Channel products. Fibre Channel's not going to go away today. But are they going to capture enough of the Ethernet switching market to be a viable business in 5 years' time? And that's a question in the back of my mind that when I do a corporate analysis of a vendor and say, which of these vendors is going to be in business in the next 3 to 5 years, Brocade has good revenue opportunities based around Fibre Channel, but not so great opportunities around growth in Ethernet. I think Juniper is a better corporate play in terms of their long-term strategy compared to Brocade, because Juniper's revenue stream is much wider. They've got more engagement with customers. And that's part of the challenge that Brocade has to overcome with my customer.
I agree with all of those points. The one thing I would point out, though, I guess, is that if you take Brocade and put it directly against Juniper and Cisco, like we have today, in their switch, I've got... Price-wise, it's for the buy price, they're effectively equivalent to the QFX and the Nexus 5000 switches, but I can take them and I can plug them together today. You don't get fabric path until you go to a Nexus 7000 today.
Okay. No, the question is, do you need fabric? You need fabric if you have three or more switches, and even with three switches, you could cheat around with multi-chassis link aggregation.
Sure.
So you need fabric when you go at beyond four or more switches.
And four would be a minimum. Even then, it wouldn't.
Yeah. Oh, and okay. You wouldn't be happy with even with four. You could go. You could put them in two pairs and run multi-chassis link aggregation between them. So five and more, you need fabric.
Yep.
For five switches, this would be like 310 gig ports.
That's a lot of blades.
Exactly.
That's a lot of blades.
Yeah. 310 gig ports is going to give you, what, 300 blade chassis? Well, let's call it 200 for the sake of an argument.
Well, 200. Let's say this will be enough for most of my customers.
Okay, let's say 310 gig ports is going to be, say, hypothetically, 120 blade enclosures, and each blade enclosure is going to have between 8 to 16 blades in it. That would give you nigh on 1,000 blades for a 5-switch network.
Yeah, that should be enough.
Give or take. You know? So wind it back. Let's say 750 blades. Let's say there's 10 blades in each chassis, so that gives you 75 chassis. Each one of those is going to be dual home to give you 150 10-gig ports. So that's not a whole lot in that sense. I'd never done the numbers like that before.
Sorry, you dazzled me with maths for a second. I'm just catching up. It is, isn't it?
Greg, and then if you buy things like UCS, which has lots of RAM, and depending on what your workload is, you could run like 100 VMs per blade.
Yeah, that's right. And so you've got 75...
Do you need more than four switches?
Well, yeah, you do, because at that point, if you're running 100 VMs per chassis, per blade, you're running, say, 8 blades per chassis for 800 VMs, then you're not going to get by with just two 10 gigs per chassis. You're going to need four.
Well, it depends on what those VMs are doing.
In my customers' networks, as I mentioned, my customers are building multi-tenant solutions. So we run out of VLANs before we run out of ports. So that's our biggest limiting factor at the moment.
Oh, I have a solution for you.
I'm glad to hear it.
VCloud Director.
Mac in Mac. Every virtual network has 4,000 VLANs, and they can make as many of those as they want.
Oh, sure. Unfortunately, that also costs pushes the cost per VM up significantly as well. So
I would note for sure the VCloud Director product is reassuringly expensive.
Oh, and it uses the Oracle database just to make you believe that it's really an enterprise product.
Larry got in on that one. I think he did a deal. The scuttlebutt I heard is that Larry said, "I'll support Oracle on VMware if I get to sell more of my products." And so he made VCloud run on Oracle, and that was the deal. That's just rumor and scuttlebutt on my part.
I didn't think there was any more soul to sell, but obviously.
Let's come to our favorite teal-colored company. And you've obviously been talking to Cisco about their solution. I think many of us would be reasonably familiar with the thing. But, you know, talk us through that, Kurt.
Well, to be honest, I'm still talking to Cisco because I'm still trying to get some answers. Most of the work I've been doing with Cisco from a research perspective has been dealing with people I know who are working on this product from the States, because I'm actually able to get answers that are fact as opposed to marketing.
Yep.
As I said, the biggest downside that I have with the Fabric Path solution is that today Fabric Path is only available on the Nexus 7000s. And again, just like we discussed before, that's a significant footprint in a pay per rack data center. Yep. Before we even discuss power. Fabric Path and OTV look to be quite an impressive product together if you have the scale to justify the costs. You manage to buy the right line cards and controller cards at the right revision level. to actually buy you a future with it.
So you're talking about a doorstep entry point. In other words, you've got to shell out the quarter of a mil for an extra 7,000 with supervisors, power supplies, and fabric modules just to get the first two ports.
Exactly.
Oh, and you need two of them.
Well, and two. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, two ports. You've got to have four. You can't have just two. So, you know, two servers, each one with one port, redundancy. Yeah, and it's like a half a million shekels before you even get started.
I mean, there's a lot to be said, though, for the Nexus 5000 platform. The Nexus 5000 is what brought me into the data center 3.0 marketing blurb, which is how I discovered the Ethereal Mind website and packet pushes, to be honest. I think that as the VPC and the multi-chassis link aggregation that gives you is a great technology. But once you take those two nodes, they still have to be joined by spanning tree to other nodes. Mm-hmm. So the Nexus 5000, I think, is a great product. The Nexus 5548 is even better because I now get layer 3, which I should have had from day one.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a very compelling argument for starting. I just would like to see some kind of inter-chassis or inter-MLAG or multi-chassis communications like Fabric Path, which I don't expect we're going to see for a while, because why would I buy a 7000 then?
Yeah.
In the entry level of the cloud market.
Yeah, to build your cloud or to start building that fabric, the first thing you have to buy today then is a Nexus 7000.
Exactly.
And then without that, you've got no starting point.
As I said, it's a very compelling argument. I'm actually quite impressed with what I've read. I can't say I've played with, but what I've read about OTV, for example, for mm-hmm. inter-data center communication.
You can also get OTV and an ASR. Router,
yes.
in it soon-ish. So it's not compulsory to get the 7000. Well, it has the feature first, or has it now, and in the future you'll be able to use an ASR router to provide an OTV edge.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not don't get locked in on that.
That's cool.
I think for most companies we will use the OSR for OTV, because the licensing price of the OTV and the 7000 is significant. You to have OTV, you've got to have the intermediate. You've got to have the advanced. Is it? There's three licenses. There's the basic license, and then there's an advanced, and then you have to buy an OTV license as well. By the time you've paid for all that, you've almost bought an ASR 1000. Not that the ASR is cheap.
Well, the thing to remember with the ASR is it's between 2 and 20 gig of throughput, which some people will complain is small, but if I'm asking them what's the size of their inter-data center connectivity, because if they're pushing 20 gigs of... Yeah,
it's a gig.
You don't have that limitation, guys. So
no, that's right. Hello.
Cool. The other thing is obviously Cisco. Like everything, we've been blogging and posting about Cisco's solution for the last 18 months because it was the first to market. They've put it out there, and if you run into problems, there are people who can help you with it. Just like everything Cisco. It's one of the biggest reasons for not deploying another vendor's product in your network is because when something breaks, am I the guy who has to write the article for everybody else to search for?
Well, Cisco's very good at proselytizing, getting out there and preaching the faith and bringing people on board early, and by giving them expensive presentations. They flow, you know, they bring their internal people in, train them, then give them slides and go out and deliver presentations to resellers and top-level customers and seed the technology. And Fabric Path is a classic case of, you know, paving the road with gold and then delivering it somewhat later on. Now, it also has to be said to me that Brocade and Juniper, clearly from what we've discussed today, have also been paving their strategy in order to make sure that your planning for the future should be coming back and talking to them about what they've got when you're ready. As you say, everybody's got Fabric Path. It's cheap to buy support. And Fabric Path is potentially more trill compliant than the others. And Cisco keeps talking about it having some sort of superset of functions, which I haven't looked into. Ivan, have you looked into what Fabric Path is supersetted for?
Yeah, the most important thing is the active-active capability. Fabric Trill has no spanning tree. So when you go from a spanning tree domain into Trill, all the traffic has to go through a single point. Otherwise, you get forwarding loops immediately. And so Trill elects a, I don't know whether the term is designated forwarder or what it is. I never get it right. So if you have multiple Trill R bridges connected to the same VLAN, only one of them will forward the traffic into the Trill fabric and out of Trill fabric. Whereas if you have two Nexus 7000s in a VPC configuration, they know exactly what the other box is doing. They know whether the other box has already seen that same packet. And so they know exactly whether they should forward the packet into the fabric or not. So they both do active-active forwarding of between the spanning tree domain and the fabric path domain.
One's a master, one's a standby.
It's exactly like HSRP. And we all hated HSRP because one router became the bottleneck.
Yeah, you can't share.
And exactly.
If you've got two of something, you want to use them both because you don't want to waste, in inverted commas. It's not waste, people. It's called high availability.
It's a waste until something breaks, and then it's a godsend.
Yeah.
But your accountant wants you to use them both all the time.
Well, not your accountant, your manager, who understands just enough stuff to be an idiot about it.
Okay, that's your comment.
Or you're silly enough to suggest it.
I should also mention at this point that, was it yesterday or 12 hours ago or something, that Ivan, you actually wrote a blog post on the Trill spanning tree integration with diagrams actually pointing out sort of what you were just discussing then?
It was 14 hours ago. Yeah, we're running
14
late.
14 hours ago. I was thinking it sounded familiar. That's all. So that actually has some good pictures sort of explaining the concept if anybody didn't pick up exactly what we were saying. Because I was picturing your diagram in my head while you were talking.
Oh, thank you. So it was useful.
It was useful to me. It's also something I can throw at my customers and go, you see this? That's the magic. We should probably mention the last vendor of the big ones, HP, which really doesn't. Ivan, what have you found from HP in terms of their data center fabric solutions?
Not much.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't heard anything new since we've met with them last September or so. So maybe they have something new, but they are keeping me carefully out of the loop.
I have had similar research. I just didn't want to say that before. I don't know. They've acquired 3Com, so they got the IRF technology, and I've seen comments on blog posts saying that it comes back from, you know, it has the heritage from 1990s technology, which they were spouting that as a plus. I wasn't entirely sure.
Yeah, that's their selling point. I got that comment from an HP guy saying, hey, this is a field-proven technology. I was like, okay, so it's an old stack technology?
So is Windows XP.
Now, I like that they have something that has been proven to work, because some of these other things are brand new, and we will be the ones catching all the bugs. Or your customers will be, Kurt.
Definitely.
One of the things that I've noticed with HP is they continually hammer on about their standards compliance activities and their absolute commitment to standards in every single way. And my gut feel is that they will wait for Trill to be standardized, and once it's standardized, they'll announce their strategy at that point. I could be a little cynical and say that HP needs the extra time to develop their technology to be Trill compliant. They'll need new silicon, new blades, you know, all those types of things. And, you know, after merging 3Com into the HP organization, I imagine that's been a painful process. I mean, I don't know for sure. And HP doesn't announce anything early. They believe it, you know, they take their SOX compliance far seriously in the same way that Juniper and Brocade do. They don't tell you anything until they're ready to announce it. So HP may be another year or two away. Is that too late? Who knows? But that's where it is. Until the Trill standard standardized, I don't think HP's even going to speak about it.
Well, I actually would have to agree with you there, which would probably imply why HP have been, every time you look for data center HP, what their solution is, it's more a talk about that they're partnering with Microsoft on the Azure solution as opposed to what they're doing physically at the network layer.
Mm-hmm.
Go over here and look at what Microsoft are doing,
mm-hmm.
and we will support that. How we make it happen at the bottom, you go build your cloud infrastructure and come back to us, and
we'll have our HP blades, and we'll have our HP networking kit, and it'll be ready when you've finished doing your Microsoft stuff, or whatever it is. Yeah, for sure. So,
That might be true. Your Microsoft stuff will take a long time.
Yes. Well, I think there were some interesting comments last week about HP perhaps looking to turn themselves more into an IBM, which is a services strategy. And IBM is less interested in selling hardware than they are in selling services to customers. And that means consulting services, you know, people in expensive cars with shiny suits, outsourcing services where they take away your IT and move it into somebody else's data center. You know, those types of things. And I think that HP in the future actually is less interested in selling products potentially than they are in saying, I'm going to manage your IT completely and you don't have to worry about anything. We'll do all of your infrastructure and just take it away. Who knows? Well, that's a very long-term plan, well, and it's just some...
Greg, comments. You see, there are different HPs as I see them.
Yeah.
One is the networking division and they make the switches. And then there's the service organization who has to deliver working IT environments to their customers. Hmm. And they have different objectives.
Yeah, I agree.
So it's the same as IBM. You know, IBM had networking products, if you remember 20 years ago. They had their own token ring switches and their own routers and who knows what else.
Mm-hmm.
And they had their services organization that had to, you know, make mainframe and everything else run. So what did those guys do? They went out and buy Cisco switches.
Yeah.
The other thing to point out is that IBM kind of needed to go into services to remain relevant, with everybody else cloning their hardware and selling it at half the price in the mass market as opposed to the mainframe market. They needed to be doing services, whereas HP have the end-to-end product line. They have the market for the enterprise desktops and servers.
And printers.
And printers.
And tablets.
And toners.
I try to wipe that from my brain.
Yeah, I think you can't... HP's networking strategy is intimately linked to their desktops and telephones. They see the future as being... You know, they provide you the laser printers, the desktops, the servers, the network, the racks, you know, all that stuff is and software themselves, you know, and they're potentially WebOS can actually be put into a desktop instead of Windows, and the WebOS will actually boot up enough of a client to, you know, and they'll have an end-to-end. It's a possibility, right? This is pure speculation.
Yeah, and don't forget that their services arm is really good.
I'd like to mention one thing, and put a big tag around here to potentially edit out. not from me, it just might not be on topic.
Yeah.
When I gave my presentation at Apricot, I gave my presentation about data center 3.0 and we're all moving to converged networks and converged networks are the way of the future. And I was all happy with myself when I sat down. Then Vijay Gill from Google stands up, mm-hmm. gives his presentation. And basically his fourth slide in says, we did the costings, and for our network ratio, converged networking cost us 3 times as much as everything else. So, for example, Google's network, they did the maths, and it's cheaper for them to build 3 separate networks than it was to build one converged architecture across the planet.
Wow.
So, because what I think the points that they made were that their architecture was... something like, say, 12 or something data centers with servers around the world, but 200 and 300 interconnect POPs. So the places that they needed to run server traffic to
were significantly lower than the places they needed to run connectivity mm-hmm. to, and that converged networking isn't always the answer. So people, do your maths if you're Google. If you're not, you're probably safe today.
Well, that's always the case, isn't it? I mean, that's our motto. It depends. Sometimes I think packet pushers shouldn't be too much. Networking is never enough. It should be, it depends.
Yeah, Kurt, also don't forget that they solve most of the problems on the application layer.
Exactly.
They have an excellent scale-out application. They don't run virtualization, they don't run VMs, they don't run bridging.
They run inverse virtualization, correct?
Oh, yes. Hello, Brad. Are you listening?
Hello, Brad. I couldn't resist. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. So they run networks the way networks should be run.
What, at layer 3?
Yes.
Sound like a true network guy, I know, but hey.
No, hey, that's how things were supposed to be run when IP was designed.
Yeah, hacking layer 2 together is just a disaster waiting to happen.
Exactly. People started using IP in the way it was never supposed to be used, and now we are trying to dance around all these application-level stupidities with VMs and vMotion and layer 2 and who knows what else.
But until such day as there are other solutions to the mass market, as networkers, I guess we're going to have to learn. If, as much as we don't like it, we're going to have to learn to do it or get a new job. So
No, I love it because this is job security. I mean, if everyone would be running their networks like Google, what would we do?
We'd be doing...
No, you'd still be teaching networking to the Linux guys. And I think I've just officially written myself out of any future employment for life now, I think.
Well, we should probably think about wrapping it up there. So perhaps, Kurt, so to wrap it up, you've got the three vendors that you've looked at, Brocade, Cisco, and Juniper. You haven't considered HP because we still haven't got their next-gen sort of data center strategy in play, and their current stuff isn't sort of meeting your needs, I guess, or it's just not part of your plan. Or is it too many vendors to look at?
Too many vendors to look at, to be honest. And the other thing is, for this particular project, there was another project that was happening side by side. So buying from the one mm-hmm. vendor made sense. And HP didn't have products in that space, but different talk altogether. Right. As I said, each of the products, the Cisco, the HP, and the Brocade, have their place. But it just depends where which tier your solution falls into and your budget.
So I'm not going to ask you which one you went for in the end because I don't want to know. I think that what we should be saying, what people who are listening should be making their own choice because each one clearly has some strengths and some weaknesses and you've got it comes back to that, what we said before. It depends.
Definitely.
Oh, I absolutely agree. They all architecturally seem good solutions. We'll just see how well the two that haven't been in existence for a long time, Juniper and Brocade, will play out in practice.
Always a challenge. Always a challenge. Well, that's it for the show this week, and thanks for listening to this Runt Packet. I'd like to thank Kurt for taking the time to get in contact with me and say we should talk about this. I appreciate it, Kurt.
No, thank you. It was going to end up on a blog post anyway, so I'd rather talk about it first and take everybody else's knowledge and blog that.
Fair enough. And tell the people where to find your blog. And
my blog is www.network-janitor.net, and can find me on Twitter at @networkjanitor.
Brilliant. Ivan, have you got any more of those sessions planned? Any more of those webcasts?
Oh, definitely. There are like 4 or 5 already planned. So it's Enterprise MPLS VPN next week, and then Data Center and Data Center Interconnect. And then there's another one, Enterprise IPv6. But this is 3 months out. I have enough IPv6 for a few weeks.
How did the one go this week? I was trying to try and sit in on that one.
It was great. I got lots of really relevant questions. So it seems that at least some people are really starting to think things through and trying to figure out what exactly to do in their production network, mm-hmm. which is good news.
And you've also got your subscription scheme as well, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. That works out pretty well. I'm amazed at how many people decide to buy that. So for less than $200, they get access to all the recordings and all the PDFs I ever made. And it's over 10 webinars right now.
And that's, how much is that again?
$199.
Maybe I should buy it myself.
Well,
you get it for free.
I should point out there that if you're going to sign up for one of the webinars, trust me, just sign up for the subscription, because I signed up for one subscription and ended up buying for one webinar, ended up getting four of them and then spent more than the subscription. Do yourself a favor, get the subscription. Sorry, Ivan.
Thank you.
And Ivan, where can we find you on the internet?
iOSHints.info is my website. Blog iOSHints.info is the blog. And if you want to send me a really nice message on Twitter, it's at iOSHints.
And of course, I'm Greg Farrow, and you can find me rambling on at etherealmind.com or on Twitter as at etherealmind. We, as always, would love to hear your feedback about today's show, so please feel free to send emails to packetpushers@gmail.com and let us know what you're thinking. If you've managed to get this far in the podcast and you've got some time to leave a positive review on iTunes, we'd be very grateful. It's the best way for us to find new listeners to the show. And of course, we have a podcast website at packetpushers.net, and you can follow us on Twitter as @packetpushers when we'll tell you that the shows get published. And as always, remember, too much networking would never be enough.